a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Everyone to the executive board. I'd like to call it to order. Roll call, please.
Senator Abdallah. Senator Ollers.
Here.
Senator Gray. Senator Gary Hansen.
Here.
Senator Miles. Senator Thiessen.
Here.
Representative Byrd.
Here.
Representative Cronin. Representative Krebs.
Here.
Representative Lucas.
Here.
Representative Putnam.
Here.
Representative Rave. Representative Tiedemann.
Here.
Representative Turbeville.
Here.
Senator Hanoff.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. We have a quorum present. I would ask for the approval of minutes of April 19th, 2010 meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Representative Krebs, second by Representative Turbeville. Any discussion on that motion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. The agenda has been posted, and before you, are there any additions?
Madam Chair, I just, if I could, would request that we'd revisit the travel policy for legislators that you adopted at the last meeting.
Thank you, Representative Lucas. We will add that as an item for clarification on the travel policy. I also have an item, and that has to do with the reversion for this fiscal year, and we'll add that also. No other additions? Thank you. We'll move on to the director's report. Mr. Decker.
Thank you. Jim is in Prague, Czechoslovakia, attending his son's wedding. So that's why you get me for today. The materials that you have, as Senator Hanoff has indicated, there will be an addition to the materials that were mailed out regarding reversions, and that should be used in conjunction with the financial statement for fiscal year 2010, which should have been provided to you earlier. So you look at those two pieces of information together. And then also regarding committee staffing, there's information in your packet regarding the costs that were associated with the two interim committees from last year to help give you an idea of how those were organized and what the spending was on that. And with that, I will conclude my director's report.
Thank you.
Can we have you back next time?
You know, though, I'll take this as a chairman. I'm really impressed that Mr. Fry went to Czechoslovakia and that his son is marrying a Czech. I mean, how much more could you please the chairman that we could have that kind of cultural brought back here? So thank you, Mr. Fry. I hope they have a good
point of over here, Dirk. I don't think that we want to discuss that situation.
Madam Chair,
Representative Krebs.
And tell me when the Czech days is as Czech Queen.
Next weekend, 18th and 19th. So.
We have the son of the other members of the LRC staff who are playing baseball in Czechoslovakia this summer and did so last summer. So we're magnifying our Czech.
Thank you, Mr. Rip. Thank you, Ruben. That's very good. Now, see, the checks are taking over. Very good. All right, moving on. A couple of items. As you know, today we are going to be conducting our interviews for selection of a member to the Investment Council. One of the pieces of information that is attached is the current council members and also on the backside as to what their current positions are. We will be doing this in a two-part. One of our candidates is unable to be present in Pierce, so we are going to be doing it via the DDN, and then this afternoon we will in person meet with the other candidates. And I believe we were looking at about this time to start. Is that correct? Representative Tiedemann, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move we go into executive session so we can do the interview with one of the candidates.
Second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. This time, we will ask the individuals present to please exit, and we will move into executive session for our interview. All right. We'll come back into regular session. Moving on with our agenda, just an update. At our last meeting, we had talked about some legislators serving on the health reform implementation plan through the governor's office, that they were organizing work groups within state government to look at some of the health care reform departments that would be involved, what the implications are, to do an analysis of the gaps, where what was being proposed in the passage of the legislation, what we needed to get into place. And at that time, we asked if we could be part of at least updates as to what was happening, because the recommendations will be made to the incoming administration. At that time, the appointments were made, Speaker Rave, myself, Senator Miles, and Representative Blake. And just to update you, we had one conference call, and that was with Kathy Mueller from the governor's office, and we discussed the letter that was being sent by the governor to the administration regarding the risk pool that the state would have option to develop in response to this short-term coverage for non-covered individuals, and what the plan would be from South Dakota. That letter has been sent to the administration, and they will be waiting until a response. They thought maybe at the end of this month they would find out. This would be separate, that the risk pool would be separate from the existing risk pool that we have. You couldn't cross over, and it would be very tailored to meet what the requirements were in the legislation to serve the citizens of South Dakota and the eligibility. I apologize, the details are not there. It was just to say that was the approach that the state was taking, rather than having the feds take on the program or come in and decide how we were going to do it. When we talked about the cost for those meetings, there is no plan to bring people on site. Rather, we will have telephone conferences and mailings. Kathy Mueller has contacted those of us also and has put us on a listserv on information that is coming out from the administration that would be updates, because they're working through. Nothing is really settled what everything's going to be, and so we're all in the learning mode of that. Any questions? Okay. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you're talking about, am I on here?
Nope.
I did. This one? Nope.
Nope, not him.
Light up? Light the camera. Thank you, Lisa. Madam Chair, thank you for recognizing me. The questions, first of all, at last meeting we did discuss something about the projected dollars that might be involved, and it was suggested or even talked about that the executive branch would pick up those costs. I don't know if that was decided in your telephone conversation or not. Maybe you can say whether or not that was arranged. The question I really have is more along the line of the details of the additional risk pool that you're putting together. So are you just giving us some information so that on that later date at the end of this month we'll get further information on how that's going to fit into the congressional administration, federal administration?
Yes, I don't have the details. We did not have the details on the conference call. The money that would go in would come from the federal government to support this risk pool. The real question is, are those dollars going to be sufficient enough to support what those utilization will be? It will be somewhere between $8 and $11 million that will come in. Unfortunately, that's to 2014, and there's question if there would be enough to sustain that. The other, they're looking at the plan or the services that they would use for the providers would be based on the fee schedule that the state employees have for their services that they have. The thought is that there would not be new contracts. They would use the existing contracts that were out there for providers so that there were things in place already so we wouldn't have to be creating or reinventing a wheel and we would utilize what's there. But the real question that is out there that cannot be answered at this time are the definite amount of federal dollars that will come in and the question, will that be enough? And then the answer in the letter that was sent would be that the state would not be responsible for any overruns, and that's the clarification that has to be made. So I'm rather nebulous, but I don't have definite answers until we get a response from the feds. Representative Lucas.
Thank you for that response in regard to the risk pool, and that seems like that would fall right in line without any additional legislation from our branch of government. But my question is, there's also going to be a need for health insurance exchanges to be set up either within our state or in consultation with other states, and that would probably require legislation. So if the Health Reform Implementation Committee has items that require legislation, would they come back to the executive board for our approval, or how would that what's the process for that happening?
Thank you for the question. That was not discussed in play. I think you're correct in that that would take statutory. That would not come back to the e-board. That would be with the next administration, whatever they decide to do. All this group is doing is identifying, when you talk about the exchanges, what's the gaps that would be there, what would South Dakota have to do to come into play, and the next administration would decide, and then that would require, I would assume, some type of legislation, but we did not discuss that, so you know, I don't have anything to say yay or nay on. That's down the pike yet as far as that. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, you said you've already had some meetings?
No, what I said is we had one telephone conference with Kathy Mueller where she shared the letter that was sent. We each received, the four of us received the letter and just had an overview of what was being submitted to the federal government.
So you really haven't started the process of this committee or what you're going to function or your oversight that you have?
Right, and we won't be in the work groups. We'll get reports or summaries as how that work group is progressing, but as far as being a participant, that it was never the intent. It was more to be a liaison and to be brought up to speed as to what those work groups are doing and what might be the gaps that they're identifying. But there's no action that we in this group will do or participate with those work groups.
So have you, excuse me if I could, Madam Chair, have you gotten any of the information passed on to you yet then?
No, just the letter that was received, that was sent to the CMS as to how South Dakota was proposing to participate in the risk pool, and just this listserv that's out there.
I am, if I could, Madam Chair, I am quite curious to know how this is working and that we do have a sharing of ideas in this, and hopefully they do it on a timely basis, so.
You know, if the committee would like, when information comes out, certainly can set it to the e-board. If we get something, make sure that it gets sent out to the committee members. Absolutely could do that. Representative Putnam.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And just following up, the reform plan, the implementation plan, has all of the agencies appointing individuals. We, from the legislative branch, have put four folks ask that those four folks be on there, and that's the ones you just named earlier, two senators and two reps. It happens to be that three of those are on the e-board. How can we, or how will this evolve so that the executive board will have some information other than just getting a copy? In other words, maybe that wasn't the design of the implementation plan, but we had to find an opportunity for the legislative branch to be part of this. And that's what we've done, we, the e-board, and that was put in place with our four members, three of which just happen to be on this committee. So are we not in the loop of this other than just information? We have no ability to oversight or admissions of, I'm going to say, efficiencies or any administrative tasks? Is it just totally going to be an executive branch implementation?
I don't think the intent was implementation. It's to gather the information as to where we are in what the legislation is proposing. It's gaps that are out there. There aren't these work groups are going to be making recommendations, not decisions what we're going to do. Other than this risk pool, putting that forth, and that came out of the governor's office, and, you know, they needed the response, states needed to respond, and that was the approach. But overall, when they were working on these work groups, it wasn't that it was going to be making decisions. These are the gaps that are there. These are the steps that could be done. But there will be no decisions as how we're going to proceed, because it's going to probably take statutory, so those decisions will come from the legislature. But it's to stay in pace as to what those gaps are and know what's happening in that process so that we are not left out of the loop. But as far as actually sitting in with the work groups, you know, those are more detailed, as I was led to believe, which is really true, because they're still working out what all this language means. Nothing is finalized on everything. Mr. Decker's got something to add here.
Additionally, Ms. Storm on our staff, since she staffs the health committees during the session, she has also met with Kathy Mueller to gather information and then keep up to speed as to what this work group is doing. So any information that she receives, we can make sure that we pass that on to the members that are interested.
Madam Chair, Representative Chris. I would make that request that Ms. Storm refer that and pass that information along to the executive board members via mail or email as it comes forth.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. The motion is that any information that Ms. Storm is providing or receiving, that that's distributed to the e-board members. Is that correct? Is that the motion?
Yes.
Any motion? All those, do we need, those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. Representative Berg, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of a comment more than everything. That's actually the thing I was going to suggest, that we have a staff person to be there, because, you know, if they got to write legislation, if they can keep up to speed. I think also in getting it to the exec board, I think we ought to make for sure the member of that committee that's not exec board gets it also, which was Susie Blake, which probably would have happened anyway. But that was what my suggestion was going to be, that we have a staff person there at this. So thank you very much.
Any other comments or discussion on this item? All right, then we'll move on. In your packet, you had a update on the Dakota Corps Scholarship and Harvey Hagen Scholarships. Dale Birch was unable to be here today. There was some question regarding the number of scholarships that were awarded. That was less than last year. As you can see, that one was the availability of dollars, and the other was the uncertainty regarding future and the economy in general and being able to support the program. Are there any other questions that we can put forth to Mr. Birch that haven't been answered in this memo from him? Just an FYI, last year we started the program that high schools have awards evenings generally, and what we did last year was contacted legislators in those districts to be present at those awards and to present these scholarships for two reasons. Number one is to bring public knowledge of the scholarships that are available and that are worked through with the legislature, and secondly, as a tie-in again, to certainly encourage our young people that there are opportunities out there. I know there are some members on the e-board that I contacted and went and did the presentations. I say thank you to those individuals and to those that are not here, because I think it puts a good connection. It puts a face behind these scholarships, and more importantly, our empowerment of the legislature and wanting to recognize our young people and support these programs. Any comments on this memo or any follow-up?
Madam Chair.
Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I don't have the report in front of me, but I did read it before I came to peer, and I think one of the things that needs to be noted, as we identified, or the group identified, a new category as far as professions that we may be limited in finding good candidates in the future, and I think they awarded two pre-vet students this coming year, because as we look across the state of South Dakota and the importance of the livestock industry, we're going to be without large animal veterinarians in the near future. And so this scholarship, I think they awarded two of them in that area, and I think that's something that is moving in the right direction.
Thank you. Senator Teason.
Thank you. Well, I would just mention that I had the pleasure of presenting both of these scholarships at Stevens High School in Rapid City, and it was a pretty exciting evening, pretty nice to sit in a room which I called the solution to our problems in the future. A whole room full of scholarship recipients, and the recipients of these two scholarships were very well qualified, and it was an honor to be a part of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. I would just reference you to the back page of that memo as far as the contributions there, and I think, you know, Mr. Clark is here, and I just have a question. I see where Align's contract gave Allianz gave $2.4 million. So I'm wondering, is there, you know, with that update on that, will that continue, or what are we looking at with that?
On the front page of the handout.
Matt, do you want to identify yourself?
Oh, Matt Clark, State Investment Officer. Thank you. On the front page of the handout that was just passed out, the fourth bullet point just had information on the funding to Dakota Corps. Just as a reminder, the executive board approved the council's decision maybe 3 years or so ago to stop its own scholarship program and redirect that money that it was getting from the Allianz contract to fund its scholarship program, to have that redirected to Dakota Corps. And and last year it was $695,000, and that's based on a formula, basically a tenth of a percent of the assets in that South Dakota 529 program. So if you have $695 million in that program, then $695,000 goes to the scholarship funding. And cumulative to date, $2.479 million. And there's roughly $800 million because the market's come back some. So the assets in the 529 program are up to $800 million. And therefore, a tenth of a percent of that is $800,000. And so the projection right now is in the ballpark of $800,000, and that would grow depending on the inflows into the South Dakota 529 college savings plan. Both new inflows and the market going up makes existing assets go up. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it did. How's that program going? I mean, that was the program with students and the funding on that.
The way that worked was when the legislature assigned us, in terms of how the money was set up, when the legislature assigned the council the responsibility to run the 529 program, we had noticed that a couple of states had arm twisted their vendors into something, a little bonus extra, for their state. And the way that these 529 vendors prefer to kind of give some money back to the sponsoring state is through scholarships, because they can publicize that, and there's a good tie-in with the college savings program, you know, funding scholarships. And so the council set up its own, which was very similar to the state's general scholarship program, and it was done a year in advance of the state's general scholarship program, to be somewhat of a prototype to demonstrate that it could be done. The only difference was, instead of a 24 ACT, there had to be a 27 minimum ACT score, and it was awarded on the basis of highest ACT scores, so it ended up being kids with 30 ACTs and above would get this scholarship, and that's what it took. Well, that became so elitist, in a sense. You know, almost all of these kids, you know, are so book smart that they all go on to graduate school, and most of them go out of state. And so I had concerns that this was not hitting our target of wanting to do something nice for South Dakota to be helpful, as long as we were able to arm twist our vendor into donating this money. And we didn't want to be in the scholarship business anyway. You know, I don't want to, we didn't, we had a, this ACT-based thing, and we're not going to sit and read applications. We're not set up for that. And there were and after ours got started, you know, the state's general scholarship program then was introduced, and then that's out there. And then this Dakota Corps thing came up, and so we said, well, let's just have the money go to one of those. And I think the executive board and the governor's office both liked the idea of funding Dakota Corps. And so that's the story of how that money came in there. There's no guarantee that when the Alliance contract expires, and it's usually like a six-year contract, I think we're into the last renewal a couple of years. You know, maybe when that expires, if they're not making money off the South Dakota 529 program, their interest in, you know, continuing on and our ability to arm twist them, you know, may change. And so, but as long as we can extract the concession from them, then we will the best that we can, and then you'll have this money to kind of direct wherever you want.
Thank you. Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, for our Internet listeners, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to just cover that there were 25 scholarships that were given out, and they went to targeted areas, like 9 for teachers, but they have to go into the math, science, or music. 2 large animal veterinarians, 8 registered nurses, 4 physical therapists, 1 physician's assistant, and 1 radiology technician. And they have to make a commitment of returning or staying in South Dakota to work in the state, or they have to repay their scholarship that's been given to them. But I agree with Mr. Clark. This has been a good investment for the state of South Dakota to keep those brightest and smartest staying in the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tiedemann, for sharing that information. I think the only other thing that I look at, you know, we're talking about $800,000 in the sense of Future Fund, Great Plains, and the Department of Labor, which is questionable in future years. And certainly that can have an impact with the continuation and realizing that's the reason they looked at the uncertainty regarding the future. But, you know, when you look at the total picture of that, certainly have to watch that. Any other questions or comments? Representative Turberville.
Mr. Clark or someone, could you give me the average amount of the scholarship, and is this a one-year, continuing four-year? Could you give me a little more information on that, please?
I don't have the details on how the Dakota Corps program works. We're not actually involved in any of the awarding of that. Our job is only to get the money and transfer it in. And so I think other folks probably have more information on that.
Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe in the report it says that over 4 years this scholarship would be worth about $31,000, almost $32,000. So it's a sizable contribution. And, of course, they have to maintain their GPA. They have to meet all those requirements. It's a very nice scholarship, and then they have that commitment to stay in the state of South Dakota afterwards. So,
okay. Thank you. Thank you for following up and providing the additional information. With that, we will move on, and we will hear the report of the Investment Council Subcommittee, Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Subcommittee for the Investment Council met this morning, and we heard the report from the Investment Council, and the Vice Chair of the Investment Council, Haven Stuck, is with us to also share with the total committee. One, there's good news to a degree. We see an increase in our investment return, even though the last 5 weeks have been challenging. We hope that we can monitor out through the end of June and still see a good return for this coming year, much better than a year ago. And we also talked about a contract, and then also visited about the investment officer compensation. And if I may, Madam Chair, I'd ask that Vice Chair Stuck cover his report to the board, and then if you could come back to me for about 3 motions. Thank you.
Good morning, and please identify yourself for the home audience.
Thank you. I'm Haven Stuck. I'm from Rapid City. I'm the vice chair of the Investment Council. I'm sitting in here today for Paul Livermore, our chairman, who wasn't able to make it this morning. I think everyone has a copy of a handout that we gave. If not, please let me know, and we can make sure that you get a copy. I would like to introduce a couple or two members of the council that are here today. Jared Johnson, the Commissioner of School and Public Lands, is on the council, as well as Rob Wiley, the Administrator of the South Dakota Retirement Fund. Starting then on that same page where we have the council people listed, we also show the organizational chart, and this includes all the employees at the investment office, starting at the top with the LRC Executive Board and the Investment Council, and Matt Clark and those that are working under him. The second page shows the assets that are under management. Shows the pretty sharp increase for several years. We had a couple of down years, but it also shows the excellent results here that have been obtained over the last 11 months. That last column is for this fiscal year through May 31, so it's 11 months of the 12-month fiscal year, and it's increased the total assets under management by well over $1 billion here this last 11 months. So we're pleased with the way that the funds have come back. We've got some good reports from the retirement system as to their level of funding, which should be good news for the retirees that benefit from the state retirement fund. Also, we have a summary of the trust funds on the third page, healthcare, the education enhancement, the Dakota Trust Fund, and also the School and Public Lands Fund. And it shows where we're at with those funds, the distributions that have been made, and we've got some idea of where we might be in the next year, but obviously a lot of that depends on what the market does for the rest of this calendar year, because some of those are on a calendar year basis. And maybe Matt has some additional comments here on the trust fund results.
If I may, my name is Matt Clark again, State Investment Officer. And each year we provide a copy of the summary for the trust funds. And if I could just walk you through that again quickly. For the healthcare trust, the principal is around $85 million. The current value of the fund is $95.5 million for a difference of $9.9 million ahead of principal. I'll remind you that the distribution is about to happen on July 1, which is the distribution that was triggered based upon the 1231 market value that was informed of the legislature during the session, and that is $3.88 million, and that will come out of that $9.9 million. And so we'll have roughly $6 million left ahead of principal. And so that gives us a little bit of cushion if the markets stay unchanged until next 12/31. That fund has enough money in there to pay its next year distribution of around $3.8 to $4 million without any market appreciation required. The Education Enhancement Trust Fund, its principal is $329 million. The fair value of the fund is $349 million, so we're $20 million ahead of principal. However, on July 1, we need to pay out its distribution of $14.8 million, so that will leave us down to about $5 million ahead of principal. And so if the markets don't change between the end of May and 12/31, next year you would only get that $5 million. And so we need the market to continue to go up a little bit more from here to make another $10 million in that fund so you can get your roughly $15 million payout next year. And so that one's still in doubt as to whether there'll be a payout in that fund. And we need the markets to be decent the rest of the calendar year. The Dakota Cement Trust, its principal value is $238 million, and the fair value is $215 million. So we're $22 million behind, although $12 million was taken out right away when that fund was started, so we're really down about $10 million from where we started investing. That $12 million distribution has just been paid out in May, the distribution that's always paid out near the end of the fiscal year in May or June has already been paid out. But for that, you know, and we would have been about where we would have started at $226 million. Then the School and Public Lands Fund down at the bottom, its market value is around $159 million. Which I consider good in relation to where that fund started, around $228 million or so when we switched to the new constitutional amendment to invest that fund in stocks and broad investment securities instead of just government bonds like it used to be prior to 2000. So we're still ahead nicely, even despite all the tough markets since 2000. We're nicely better off for having made that change. And the payout for the last year, including the one to the Board of Regents that will happen in June, will be about $10.5 million for that fund. So that's the details for the dollar values. In terms of returns, I'll skip back to the retirement system for a minute. And through May 31, the retirement system was up about 20.7%. And it's been a rough week since the end of May, and so we're probably down through Friday. We're up about 19.6% fiscal year to date, we would estimate, and plus or minus whatever the market's doing today. And compared to our benchmarks, that will be one of our best years that we've ever had. And so in terms of the council focusing on its primary goal of adding value to what the indexes do, this year is a year that we're getting our rewards for many of the things that we've done during the last couple of years. And so that's good news, return, you know, does help whittle away at our funding issue for the retirement system. If you have any more questions on that, I'll
there is a question. Representative Putnam
is here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we were discussing the cement trust fund, Dakota Cement Trust Fund, Representative Dennert made some changes with regard to how is that going to affect us now when we look at this next year. How is that going to affect us with regard to your expected return and how that distribution is going to happen? Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that was a change that had some protection involved in it. I want to be sure that...
Yes, sir. That proposed constitutional amendment that will go to a vote of the people in November would change so that instead of there being this minimum $12 million every year, and a formula that said if 5% of the value of the fund, you know, is more than the $12 million, you can get the higher amount, but always the $12 million until as long as there's that much left in the fund. Well, it's going to change to where next year it would simply be a flat $11 million. And then the next year it would drop, you know, another million. It would drop basically $1 million a year for roughly 4 years to get down to the $8 million level. And then after that, it would switch to a formula, which would be based upon a 4% formula like the Education and Healthcare Trust Funds have. And just whatever 4% of that fund is, that would be paid out as long as the fund is above principal. So it would change over that four-year period of time to become more like the Ed Trust and the Healthcare Trust, to where you have to be above principal to get anything, and then you get 4% of the value.
Follow up for me. Will your board, will you make some decisions about the informational side of this when it comes to the election cycles? I mean, as we discussed this in the legislature, it made good common sense to us to help preserve, if you will, those dollars in that trust fund, because as we see, we weren't certainly getting back to the principal. But are you somehow going to be able to involve yourself in the education process as well as the legislators who supported this and so forth? Because I think it's going to be important for the general citizen to try and understand as best they can with a constitutional change we're going to have to do something that makes good common sense and connects with the investment council itself.
Madam Chair, yes, sir. We will stand ready to help support that in any way that we can. We can help legislators. We can prepare the presentations for legislators. I can provide any other backup information that they would like to have. If they would like to have me in tow for any presentation on the issue that they would like to do, I would be more than willing to do that. And, you know, I'll travel around the state if need be, if I'm asked by the executive board to do that. And so we committed during session that we would help out in any way that we're asked.
Thank you. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think at one time we were asked, you know, like the other ones, we can't spend the principal unless we had a two-thirds vote. Where on this one, the law actually says we have to spend any excess money. Well, we have two conflicts here because of the way the law read when the originally voted on the trust fund of the cement plant, that all of a sudden now we're changing that formula. Is there any going to be any conflict within the law in doing that?
Go ahead.
The main difference between the remaining difference between what the Dakota Cement Trust would become if the new constitutional amendment becomes passed by the people is that that fund would not be available to be utilized by the legislature with that three-quarter vote. So the Ed Trust and the Healthcare Trust can be used, diverted for other purposes with a three-quarter vote of each house of the legislature. And the Dakota Cement Trust, by constitution, would not be able to be touched but for that constitutionally provided payout, which is the 4% of the value of the fund, but limited to only if the fund remains above principal.
Any other questions? Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I understand this correctly, if it is passed by the people this coming fall, then it would go into effect January 1st? And I see Ruben saying no, so it would go into effect July 1st. So it wouldn't impact this coming year.
I'm sorry. Would you please go to the microphone, identify yourself so the home can hear?
I'm Ruben Bespitz. I'm legal counsel for the South Dakota State Legislature. And typically what happens on the effective dates of constitutional amendments is the date that the Secretary of State certifies that the thing has passed, which is usually a date in November, it officially goes into effect. Now, there may be internal provisions within the thing that, for all intents and purposes, mean that the effective start is going to be later. But unless the provision itself carries different information, it goes into effect on the date that the Secretary of State certifies that the vote has correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a follow-up then, and thank you very much for that answer to the question, what that says is that if it passes, then this coming year in May, we would only be looking at $11 million coming into the general fund from the cement trust fund.
Correct.
Just to go back to that discussion, because as we're talking here, you know, the education piece about this is sort of floating because the legislature was not unanimous in the vote for this piece of legislation. But the information should be, you know, you said you would go out, should be made available so that those that, you know, wanted that piece to have the correct information if they're going to go out and educate the public. So you said I would be very willing to go out and do that. So is that a sense that you will put together some type of piece of education materials that would be available at the request of a legislator that would cover what the intent is of what's being on the ballot and explain it in simple language to the citizens?
Yes, we can do that. Is there a particular timetable for which you would like to have that? Would you like to have it, you know, like in the next a month, or would you like to have it all completed for your August meeting?
Why don't you say that? Representative Krebs. Thank you, Madam Chair. I make a motion that we submit, the Investment Council submits this information to utilize to the Executive Board as we represent our respective caucuses, and that our respective caucuses could go and turn to us then for distribution of that information.
A date,
I'm sorry. Thank you, Representative Putnam. Date by August meeting. That would be August
2nd.
Second on the motion or second on the date? Representative Krebs, seconded by Representative Putnam, that information would come back to the e-board. That would be an educational piece, and then contact could be made through the e-board for the information by legislators that wanted to take it out and do education pieces. Is that correct? Representative Lucas.
Just for clarification, I think we need to include the joint resolution, I believe, was House Joint Resolution 1004, what we're talking about, correct?
Yes.
I believe so, yes. I there were two of them, 04 and 05. I think it was 04 that was the one that was passed.
Representative Krebs, was that included in your motion?
No. We will add that to the motion.
So you are moving to amend that motion to include that information?
Yes, I think so. We're okay. Aware that, you know, we mentioned the prime sponsor, but okay. I think generally we speak to the bill number. In this case, it was a resolution number.
Thank you. Is there a second to that amend? Second by Representative Tiedemann. All those in favor of the amendment to the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Okay, now we're at the motion. Any further discussion on the motion as amended? Clarification on it? Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay. You can go on.
Well, thank you. I should make one more point on this in relation to the returns. You know, I just discussed the retirement system returns. But the returns for these funds range in the 16% area. They were a month ago as high as 20%, but the market decline during May brought those numbers down. I'd also like to point out that the long-term expected returns are in the 6.5% range for these funds, as opposed to a little bit higher than that last year, because interest rates are so low and the stock market has come back significantly. That reduces the future or prospective returns. Therefore, going forward, we don't currently project that we would earn enough to cover the payouts of 4% for the Ed and Healthcare Trust, for example, and offset inflation of 3%. We would project we would only cover 2.5% roughly of our 3% inflation forecast unless we're able to outperform the index's and so there isn't necessarily anything we can do about that other than to be aware that one of the general goals that we've always had for these trust funds is to, you know, not only make the payouts but to keep the funds up with inflation over time. And it's looking like we might fall a little short of that unless we can outperform the indexes. And that was it for the trust fund detail.
Any questions? Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I certainly support the concept of the trust funds keeping up ahead of inflation, but now they're saying inflation's at 1% or less, and we're still targeting 3%. So I know, I'm guessing your answer will be to make up for lost ground, but do you ever envision that 3% for inflation being a different number?
It's a long-term forecast, and that is has been for a while our long-term forecast. You know, it's lower right now during the recession. When boom times come back someday, early on, it'll probably be higher than that, maybe substantially higher in some future adverse scenarios. And so that's our probability weighted central forecast, and we do expect it to bounce up and down, and therefore you could I guess view the periods when it's low as sort of being a makeup for the times when it's higher.
Are there any other questions on the any of the trust funds or investments? If not, we'll proceed on to the next page, and that sets out the relationship with Steve Myers, the former state investment officer.
Representative Tiedemann.
I think that really falls into the personnel-related, and I'd like to tie that in with the compensation for the executive. And so I'd move that we go into executive session.
Second.
I'll second it.
Okay, moved by Representative Tiedemann, second by Representative Berg, to go into executive session to discuss personnel issues. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed nay. Motion carried. Thank you. We will move into executive session. Mr. Strzok, would you like to review the compensation survey that was done?
On the last page of the handout that was given to you by the investment office, we detail some results of the compensation incentive study that was done completed a couple of months ago. This updated a previous compensation study that was done in April of 2006. And what we found was that on a national level, compensation generally increased quite rapidly in the 2000 to 2008 period. We didn't increase near as much in South Dakota. And now, even though the national level compensation may have fallen some, we're still below what we look at as the benchmark. And that benchmark we look at is 30% below the national compensation average. So targeted at about 70% of the national compensation average. We're pretty close to that. We're about 5% possibly below that. So we're still below it. We think then our compensation package is in line with the compensation paid on a national level with that adjustment. And we can argue about the adjustment. We believe that there is some downward adjustment that's necessary and advisable, and that's why we've kind of looked at that 70% figure. You can argue, well, maybe it could be lower than that, but I think we lose the have the possibility of not being able to hire some of the people that we would like to hire and retain those people. And we've been able to hire excellent people, and our retention level is really fantastic. I think one person over the last 10 or 12 years has left the office. So with the compensation we paid in the past, we've been able to retain what we feel are some outstanding employees. We then looked at the discount and everything and come up with what we believe is a fair compensation. And as the last paragraph in that page talks about, the compensation indicated that we were a little bit behind our benchmark target, probably a 35% discount instead of a 30% discount. But our thoughts were to defer closing that gap until the economy begins to recover, which we hope is going to be fairly soon, but it may be a year or two off. We projected then the fiscal year 2012 budget request changes to be similar with what we presented last year. That was, as Representative Tiedemann just explained, a version A with normal increases and a version B with no increases for senior staff.
Thank you. Questions? I see none. Thank you very much. Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first I would like to move that the E-Board recommends to keep the base salary of our state investment officer at the same amount as 2010 and to continue the incentive plan.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Representative Tiedemann, second by Senator Ahlers, to keep the compensation for the investment officer at zero and with the increases I'm sorry.
And continue with the incentive plan?
And that continue was... with the incentive plan as was proposed. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those nay, Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Allers?
Aye.
Senator Gary Hansen?
Aye.
Senator Teason?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Krebs?
Aye.
Representative Lucas?
Aye.
Representative Putnam?
Aye.
Representative Tiedemann?
Aye.
Representative Turbeville?
Aye.
Senator Hunhoff?
Aye.
10 yeas.
Motion carried. Representative Tiedemann?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I also would move that we adopt the report that was presented to us by the Investment Council Board that identifies that the salary, the compensation budget going forward would come forward in two versions, and that we then recognize also the adoption of the consulting contract.
Thank you. It was moved by Representative Tiedemann, second by Senator Allers, that we adopt the Investment Council's recommendation for the compensation budget and also the consultation report that was there for the consultant. Is that correct? Good. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Allers?
Aye.
Senator Gary Hansen?
Aye.
Senator Teason?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Krebs?
Aye.
Representative Lucas?
Aye.
Representative Putnam?
Aye.
Representative Tiedemann?
Aye.
Representative Turbeville?
Aye.
Senator Hunhoff?
Aye.
10 yeas, 5 excused.
Motion carried. Representative Tiedemann, do you have any other closing comments?
Madam Chair, thank you. I just want to commend the Investment Council Board for having a good turnaround, and let's hope that it continues up that same slope and not down, because we want to protect investments that the people have put in. It helped us through the appropriations process. When we went into it, we thought we had $0 to work with, and I think maybe we didn't buy at the exact lowest time, but we bought at the right times, and we still were able to use about $17 million to help in doing the people's work for the state this current coming year. So thank you very much.
And we appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion and welcome any comments by any of the legislators anytime you have comments or questions for us.
Thank you. And I do want to extend a thank you. And Mr. Stuck, you did an excellent job. And who's ever sitting here next year will look forward to seeing you return as chairperson. We do regret we will not be able to do our visit and see the offices and meet with the staff, but please give our compliments to the staff and thank them for the outstanding work they are doing for the people of South Dakota in their efforts. So,
Chair.
Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This past weekend or so, there was a Midwestern Higher Education Council meeting over in Sioux Falls, and some of the members of this committee sat in and learned some things about some in other investment councils, and I'd asked if you'd recognize Representative Tiedemann to give a little information on what Illinois has happened over there in their investment council this year that we learned there at that meeting.
Thank you. Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll try to capture it. The report was fairly quick and sound bites. And, of course, there was only one state that had a lot of money, and that's North Dakota. South Dakota was at the next level. We're still alive. We can still pay our bills. But Illinois reported that their retirement system is at 48% of the asset value. And the state was trying to supplement it with $3.8 billion to help bring it up so it was floating, and they couldn't get it done because they can't pay their other bills. So South Dakota may be in a tough position, but I'm glad that our investments have returned and that retirement system is in good shape. So thank you.
Thank you. You might want to just share that tidbit that you shared at the committee, number one, South Dakota in two areas.
Yes, if I may. I think South Dakota's retirement system is amongst the best funded in the country. I think it's generally regarded as the best managed retirement fund in the country, both with respect to design of benefits and making sure that they're affordable, and in the investment side. And Mr. Wiley might have some further information on that. And then also this year, I'm delighted that the investment returns in comparison to the market indexes, and that's really all the investment council does. You know, we don't make the market go up or down. All we can do is try to add incremental value over and above what the indexes do. That's really our job as we see it. If the market's up 30%, we want to be up 32. If the market's down 30%, we want to be down in the 20s. And add value. And if we can do that over time, well, the markets will take care of themselves over the very long term. And if they average out the 6, 8, 10% like markets do, and we've added an extra percent or two, well, if you compound an extra percent for 30 years, you've got a third more money or more compounded in your fund, which is what happened in the past. And I'm delighted that this year so far, it looks like we're having amongst our best years ever of adding value. And there's a month to go, and so, you know, maybe we'll end up, you know, having our best year ever, or maybe our second best year ever, depending on what happens. And so that's really gratifying to know that the long-term investment approach that requires your support for us to do, the council has to support that, the staff has to be on board, and we have to believe that we have your support to do that, that you'll stick with those strategies during those darkest days, because we can go through a couple of year periods that are terrifying when you're constantly buying into weakness and it gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and you keep buying more and more and more, while most others are worried about how much they've lost so far and are selling. And so that's what we've tried to do. And now that things are coming back, we're getting the reward for that. And if things continue to come back, you know, sometime in the next several years, well, there'll be more to come. So I'm grateful for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Putnam.
Comment, if I could, Madam Chair. Not been a favorite of being in a mutual admiration society, and it can easily turn into one when we get good. But the fact still remains that the old cowboy adage in South Dakota remains, you know, if you can brag without lying, go ahead and brag. And we have had the ability to do that over a number of years, and I think it's part of the executive board members, not just myself, but others over the past when this first started. And we have stuck it out, and it has worked well for us, while others hired and fired and tried to knee-jerk their way to the top, and we have not. We have had good, stable leadership, boards, and e-boards here. I'm talking about your board, too. And leadership that have maintained what we have. And I know the other states, I know how they went about it. As soon as one of their members got a little flaky, they thought they should get rid of them, and they hired somebody who had a better tongue, maybe, or a more silver tongue, and it did not pay off for them. So I congratulate you. And for a moment, I'll be a member of the Admiration Society. But other than that, we can brag, and we should. Thank you.
Mr. Wiley, brevity.
Very shortly. Again, mutual admiration. We couldn't do all these things if it wasn't for you and your predecessors. We've had great leadership from all the legislators, from the executive branch, our own boards, the Investment Council and Retirement Board. The School and Public Lands, everyone is better off for the reserves, for the trust funds. Everything that has been done has just been so prudent. We have a gentleman coming into our meeting next week here, this week, at the Retirement Board, and he's a nationally known person in this area, and he's just throws up his hands. I can't believe you've done all of these things that no one else is doing, and it's working so well. So congratulations to every one of you. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Senator Allers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be the buzzkill then. Since we've had so much admiration. I just, a quick question. I think it's been covered once before. Can you explain why North Dakota did so well compared to everybody else, what their strategy was, and then compare it to their long-term average versus our long-term average?
I think there might be some misunderstanding of their situation up there. you know, there's always two sets of numbers. There's the actuarial value of assets, which is the smooth number, and then there's the real number, what's your stuff really worth. And so I think that, you know, South Dakota's investment results have been quite different over the long term than all of the neighboring states. They've had some very unfortunate trouble up in North Dakota as their person who has my job committed suicide, unfortunately, this spring. And so they've had a lot of trouble up there, and they're going through some internal reviews to figure out exactly what shape they are in. So it's with a heavy heart that I have to say that I think they've struggled more.
Madam Chair, if I may, I think I misled. Financially, North Dakota is doing extremely well, and it's called oil, and their conservative nature. They didn't give a report on their state investment or state retirement. So South Dakota, of all of the 12 states there, was number one.
All right. Thank you very much. We are close to ending on time. We're going to recess. Please be back by 1:15 where we'll start our interviews and we'll go into executive session. Is there anything else before we leave? Thank you for the discussion and the timeliness of staying on schedule. Have a good lunch. This payoff, we appreciate that. Demonstrates to us that you have a continued interest in doing public service. This is the beginning of your career with the Investment Council. You will be seeing some of us on a regular basis over the course of the year, and we wish you well. And again, we say thank you for stepping up, and we appreciate that.
Well, thank you for your time. I'll work hard.
I know you will. Thank you.
Congratulations.
All right, we'll move to the next item, and that's the selection of the interim committee membership. You have received over the lunch hour the committee memberships. This year we had two summer studies. It was the Bureau of Administration and also the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. The Personnel Committee met this morning, and that was Representative Krebs, Berg, and Representative Tiedemann. Senator Miles was not in attendance. We looked at all those individuals that had applied. Our first discussion was on committee size, and it was concluded that we would have 11 members on the Bureau of Administration Agency, and we would have 13 on DENR. We went through the listing of those individuals that marked one as their priority, did a balance, as you can see. I don't have the other. I'm looking. I have the sheet, but I was looking at how we concluded everything. Here we go. We had, under the Bureau of Administration, we had 7 from the House and 4 from the Senate. And then for DENR, we had 8 from the House and 5 from the Senate. Mm-hmm. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we going forward, will you take a motion to approve this? Is that what you have in mind? And if that is the process, if one or more can't serve or don't want to continue to serve, even though they've requested, will there be alternates done by the e-board, or does that go through LRC? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. We did not include alternates, but that probably should be on there that we do that. My apologies, as we were going through that this morning. Actually, we had looked at less members, and so that's why we went with 11-13 based on the numbers that were there of people that may not participate.
I might make a suggestion that even we are well aware that our dollars are short, therefore only the two studies, and therefore the short membership also. Maybe if someone doesn't want to serve or won't or can't, we should just leave it be. But sometimes the even numbers cause some problems, too, with regard to votes. And I don't know how you will address that when time comes. But thank you. I didn't mean to obstruct the system, but it's a good thought process to consider something.
No, I appreciate that. Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I recognize Representative Putnam's comments, and I think it comes into play that the executive group can make this decision because we don't know if it's going to be somebody from the West River, somebody from the East River, somebody from the majority party, the minority party, the Senate, or the House. So it's hard to pick all of those alternates at this point. So I would trust that we can put that task before the executive group of our e-board, and they can make that with LRC.
Any other comments to that? Representative Lucas.
Well, thank you. Would that allow time for the committee to meet if we need to meet in August to replace somebody that doesn't want to serve or can't serve, or can that just happen automatically?
I would respond, we could do it by telephone, that if we found somebody did it, we'll just have a real quick conference call. So, because I appreciate what you're saying for timeliness to get this moving. So once those people are contacted, if someone said no, then come back and we would meet via telephone. Representative Berg.
I think we did that way last year. I think you called me and we made some adjustments, and so I think that shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. Would that answer your question, Representative? Okay. With that, if you're comfortable with that, I would entertain a motion that you approve the committee membership and the designations, and then we'll move from there.
Madam Chair, so move.
Second.
Moved by Representative Krebs, second by Representative Putnam to approve the assigned members for the review of the Bureau of Administration and the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Allers?
Aye.
Senator Gary Hansen?
Aye.
Senator Teason?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Krebs?
Aye.
Representative Lucas?
Aye.
Representative Putnam?
Aye.
Representative Tiedemann?
Aye.
Representative Turbeville?
Yes. Aye.
Senator Hunhoff?
Yes.
Aye.
10 yeas, 5 excused.
Thank you. Motion carried. We have two additional items left, including the report from the Computer Technology and Personnel. Representative Krebs, do you have a report, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We'll make a brief overview from the meeting this morning with Senator Allers and Representative Lucas and myself and Lou Adamson from the LRC. Did talk about a brief overview that the current computer lease will be up. It's a two-year lease, and we do lease them versus buying them. BIT does actually do the purchasing or the decisions as far as which computer company that we contract with. The reason being is to have the support, I should say Lou and the LRC appreciates having the support by the state BIT to give them technical support if we need it to be, such as today that I believe there's three computers that were brought in for repairs and BIT was up here within 5 minutes. And that's the kind of things that we need when we lease versus if you buy them. And we go outside of the state BIT operation and LRC purchases on our own, we then would therefore be on our own for repairs or help, technical help as well. Going back to the discussion on leasing versus buying, along with your lease, you do get a maintenance agreement with that. And Lou has commented that has been very appreciative to work with, that they are within 72 hours turnaround time for the computers to come back. The contract is out of a company in Iowa, I believe she said, Sioux City. Am I correct, Senator Allers? So the turnaround time is very quick. Some of the challenges that they have is with our ACT program. We asked, why do we have to be and why are we tied to HP or why couldn't we use another kind of computer? And it has to do with the notebook side of it, being a notebook computer, because therefore we can utilize our ACT program, which allows the legislator to actively and interact with your computer, whether it be taking notes or whatnot. So you do need to have a notebook ability because of the ACT program that we as a state legislative body utilize. The new contract, again, is up. You will be bringing your computer in December for the budget hearing and making the swap out to the new leased computers. They have not finalized the dollar amounts. That is in the contract negotiations that they're working on right now. In August, we'll have those specific numbers. It sounds like it's going to be the same computer, the HP EliteBook, with just some of the upgrades that have been I guess, put forth with HP on that particular computer. You'll bring in your old computer and your bag, but they'll just take out the old computer and then put the new one in, and you'll keep your bag. Any questions? Okay. Representative Lucas, and then Senator Hansen, and then I'll go this way.
Yeah, I was just going to add that you'll have the option to purchase your computer back if you want. I think the company is Riverside Technologies, but you'll actually trade it in and get your new computer and at the budget address in December. And then I suppose there'll be a tag on it that this is yours, or if you want to do that. And there'll be communication coming out to all legislators regarding that. And the other thing that Lou mentioned, the most serious problem or damage has been coffee spilled on the keyboards. These are not waterproof. So tell everybody to be careful, because that's kind of an accident that can be avoided.
Thank you. Senator Hansen.
Madam Chair, now did I get him right? If I'm not coming back, can I purchase my computer and keep it? Okay. And they'll give us prices this fall on what's going to cost us?
Yes, a little more of the details later.
Thank you.
Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this past week I was at the Midwestern Higher Education Compact, and when we joined that, we also had the capacity to participate in some of the contracts that have already been negotiated by MEC, i.e. one with Dell. Now, I don't know if Dell can provide the exact computer, but that contract is there, and it could be a huge savings to the state. That's where I'm coming from.
Senator Ahlers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's an excellent point, Representative Tiedemann. I brought up the same question. I explored the Dell contract also. What Lou had told us is that these are tablet PCs, and the tablet function is specific to our ACT system, and that Dell does not have a tablet desktop or notebook that we can integrate our system to. Plus, if we do that, we are parting ways with Bit, and Bit will not service our computers. And then I asked her, well, how much would that cost? And they said in the past, they've explored having a separate service other than Bit, and it would be an additional $2 million a year. That's what we were told.
Madam Chair, Representative Krebs, we have Lou here, too, for questions. But just to clarify, the state Bit purchases all the rest of the computers for the rest of the state employees versus our lease. And that's where the clarification was, is that we wouldn't have that support if we went outside of their purchased contractual brand. But the Dell, I believe, and help clarify, it does not have a notebook capability for our ACT system.
Madam Chair?
Identify yourself. Yes, please.
Dell doesn't have a tablet. It has a notebook, but doesn't have a tablet device. We've looked at that earlier. Mac, we've looked at that before, too. It didn't come in any cheaper. In fact, it was more expensive than for us to lease. So we've looked at that option also.
Follow-up?
Well, just based on the information that I received and visiting with the Dell person at the meeting, he indicated that he had visited with the purchasing agent here in BOA and also with Mr. Dahl, the commissioner. And there's a couple other things that kind of come out along the side that aren't. It's a catalog which gives you the capacity to go and look at everything that Dell has. Now, if they don't have a tablet, that's understandable. I can't believe that they don't. But I mean, I just find it unreal that they wouldn't be moving towards a tablet venture. And the commissioner, because the contract is already in place, I mean, shouldn't have a problem with buying from them. So.
Representative Putnam, any other questions on that? Okay. You can say something if you want. No. Senator Ahlers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was also discussed during the meeting that we should get in contact with members of our caucuses and get input and ideas of things that we would like to see on our new new laptops. An example would be having the ACT appropriations icon and program available to all legislators on their computer versus just the appropriation members. So, you know, ideas like that is what they're looking for. Is there something different that we would like to see on those laptops and get back to her by our August meeting so they can make those types of adjustments.
Thank you. Was there any discussion about fulfilling the position that there was a resignation in prior to the end of session?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lou mentioned that they hope to have several positions filled by December for Scott Darnell's. She did say the number two, and if you want to clarify that, Lou, what your thought process is as far as FTE and dollar amounts and things like that. Scott Darnell's replacement.
It's been advertised. I don't know. Jim is handling that, and I was in on the part where we were going to share that FTE with BIT, but I haven't seen anything.
Okay, that's a clarification. So instead of Scott's position was LRC one FTE, now we're looking at a shared position.
It'll be an LRC position. We have say so over this position.
So it'll be one FTE.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right, we have two items left. Representative Lucas, you wanted to discuss the clarification on the travel policy?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. At your last meeting there, in the minutes there, it reflected that Mr. Fry would send out a travel policy memo to all legislators, and it went on to say that Representative Krebs asked that the memo clarify that a legislator may attend a meeting that is paid or by others or by self. And in the goldenrod sheet that Mr. Fry sent out, it talks about any legislator who wishes to attend a national meeting but will not be seeking reimbursement from state funds may do so without prior approval. Now, it doesn't really speak to the option of a corporate sponsor or a lobbyist sponsor or something like that. And if we are going to go that route, I guess I would urge legislators in my caucus to be careful in pursuing that because of our oath of offices. And if I could, I'll just read what we all say. It says, nor will I accept or receive directly or indirectly any money pass or any other valuable thing from any corporation, company, or person for any vote or influence I may give or withhold on any bill, resolution, or appropriation. So to me, it seems like a slippery slope that because we don't have money from the state coffers to fund out-of-state travel, and then if we start allowing other groups to fund our travel, then and this money isn't reported as campaign contributions are, and all of a sudden we don't have a strong bond, as many of us do, with other lobbying groups. There could be some unethical charges put against us, and I guess I just wouldn't want to see any legislator brought up in ethics charges because they're receiving funds to travel out of state for these national conferences.
So, Representative, what are you asking for this group then?
Well, the first thing would be if we are going to allow corporate sponsors, I think that needs to be clarified up front. And my position is that I would not recommend that for any of those in my caucus or any other legislators that would come to me. I would say I think it's a slippery slope. Don't do it. But nonetheless, if it's out there, I guess it's out there and people can make that decision on their own.
Okay. Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I think even if we do allow the corporate travel, I think it should always be reported. You know, that so that we don't have these things being funded and we don't know they're being funded and who they're being funded by. Because I don't think we want to do these things. I mean, it's right away in my mind, I start resurrecting, you know, the legislature could almost form what the Governor's Club is. that he uses for some of his travel and some of those things, that we as legislators could almost go out and start establishing that same thing, that you could pull from to, if you wanted to go places where we're not funding it ourselves. And I know where Larry's going with this, and I agree with some of it, and probably most of it, but I think it's, we got to be careful of, if we go out and have to all of a sudden start soliciting corporate sponsors so we can go to these things. And it's almost left the indication that that's what they were asking us or that's what we could do. I don't think that was the intent at the time, but I think it could be a consequence of it.
Representative Putnam, did you have a comment?
Well, I was going, I heard what Representative Lucas was talking about. I know that we're thinking, when we say corporate, that has a very distinctive, there are non-profit corporates. There are for-profit corporates, and some of the non-profs offer legislators speaking engagements that pay, etc. I mean, I don't know how we decide this. I like the idea that if you are indeed asked or somebody contributes for you to listen in on a meeting or go to a meeting for them as a legislator, that somehow it should be reported and then a decision can be made. I don't know how else to do this. We have an ethics committee. No one wants to be brought in front of it and then found to be innocent. Nobody wants to go through that. And I don't know if we start curtailing all evidence of anybody, a cup of coffee, an afternoon lunch, an evening drive, I don't know where this is going to end. So I respect Representative Lucas's thought process. I just don't know how we're going to debate or how we'll put that into words, what we've tried to do over the years. Representative Diedrich has put in place the language for the Ethics Committee that we've been through here on the e-board, and it allows a complaint system, and it goes up through the leadership. And so I don't know if that still is something that we want to accept or not. And then at that time, those chairs or those speakers of the House made the decision. Is that risky for us? I hear that might be, and I'm a little perplexed because oftentimes legislators get asked to do certain things, not necessarily for their vote, but for their informative process. We're able to go and then come back as able speakers, etc., to pass on great information. So maybe it's a decision that should be made shortly or not at all.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Krebs. Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe it would be a suggestion that LRC sends out to the entire legislative body the restatement or a statement of the ethical commitment that we have taken as a part of our oath of office, just to remind us all of that. Representative Turbeville?
Well, I like the suggestion that Representative Krebs came up with, because here, you know, if we start talking about profits, non-profits, what have you, and then we go to the chair, yourself, Madam Chairman, it's going to consume a lot of your time trying to decide whether this nonprofit is, in fact, a lobbying group, and then we've got to come up with a whole list of what we're going there for. I think we need to make our own decision. I don't know of anyone that has abused the system in the past, and so I agree. Let's send out the information to the legislators, let them make their own decisions, and I think we'll be all right.
Any other comments? Representative Lucas, I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. I feel comfortable from the conversation. I mean, I think in part of the reason why I brought up is just beware, you know. Ideally, the best solution would be that we had the money to fund it with state taxpayer money, even though, you know, we got criticized for that. But that's much better. Then we know who's going where on the state dollar. Now, we're in a situation where we cut that out of our budget. So sometimes choosing an alternative is worse than the problem we had before, which was, you know, the travel budget that some media thought was being used too excessively. You know, for the most part, you know, Director Fry has been very good about supporting our travel that we've had in past years, that it is professional development. We come in here from our related jobs and backgrounds. And when I first came, I knew very little about the legislative process. I was as naive to it as anybody. And some of those experiences, traveling to other states for conferences, does help you come back to be a better legislator and to advance your agenda. But again, I just would not want to do that with being funded by a particular lobbying group.
Madam Chair. Representative Krebs. I make a motion that the LRC sends out a reminder of the travel policy pertaining to the yellow sheet as previously sent, and with that would be the ethics oath of office, I should say the oath of office and the ethics statement where we agree to that.
It's been moved by Representative Krebs, second by Representative Turberville, that the yellow sheet be sent out again, which is our travel policy for fiscal year 2011, and to include in it the ethics statement regarding the use of private dollars for travel. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would we want to incorporate into that if you do accept any travel from outside, that it has to be reported? Could we put that in that same? Would you mind putting that in that in part of that motion?
Be reported?
Yeah. Just so that we keep track of who is paying for it.
Yeah.
Do you want to amend that motion to include that, and then we can have discussion on it?
Yes, I would like to amend that into it, if you would.
To include that if you are taking a trip that's paid by a source other than state government, that that's reported to LRC for travel.
Yes.
Okay. It's been moved to amend that motion by Representative Byrd, second by Senator Ahlers. Discussion on that amendment. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then where would the reporting go, and what would they do with it? Would they notify you that you were in violation, or would they give you an okay, or would it just be put up on a board somewhere?
It would be like any other. It would come back to us as exec board, I would submit. And maybe that should be a separate motion even, because yours is just to send the information out. Maybe I should have just a separate amendment all the way, that any outside travel still be reported, so that we know if there's a problem out there of seeking, you know, monies to get your travel, you know, because I mean we border on even like our per diem we get now and the cost that reimburses we get, we border on whether that's almost income. You know, because we've said before, we can't really go much further there without making them be an IRS thing, you know. And so, I mean, I think if this is the way it's going to be going, I think we need to be aware of that we can maybe head off a problem before it really happens. But it maybe should be a separate motion.
Senator Ahlers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the reporting for this could show up in our reports that we get from Carol Huber in LRC, where we go to different events and how much it costs to travel. It would be no different than the ALEC listing that already exists on there. We're not a member for it, but it does break that down already, so I don't see it any different from that. I don't think we have to overcomplicate it. I think as long as we're going as a legislator to an event, if that's listed and how it was paid for, I think that's simple enough and can be reported back with the rest of our trips to NCSL or CSG or any other event.
Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question for clarification. Now, sometimes there's committee chairs or others that are invited to NCSL, and their travel has been paid for by NCSL, which could have come through from a corporate sponsor. So how is that going to be treated? Sometimes I think we may be sticking that stick in the beehive, and it's going to cause more problems than what we really realize. I think the fact that, you know, you sign on this form saying that these costs are accurate, and if you're going to report in that you received this payment from a corporate sponsor, and if that's part of your then campaign contribution, it has to be reported to the Secretary of State.
Representative Turbo.
Well, I got a couple of problems with it. I can't support this amendment to the motion that I seconded. I can't support it if it is a separate motion. For what purpose do you intend to use this list? If Representative Allers goes to a meeting in St. Louis that is paid for by ALEC, why do we have to know about that? I agree with Representative Tiedemann. You're looking, you know, you're looking for a problem. And I think if someone says, I'm sending you $5,000 or $500 or whatever to go to a meeting on behalf of the ag producers or the whatever manufacturing society, I think that it's your decision and your choice whether or not you accept that. If you do, then you report it on your campaign financing. But to have another list is of no use, and I disagree. I can't support that.
Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, last year I was asked to go to a National Governor's Conference out in San Francisco. It was paid for by the National Governors Association, the travel out there. But they had corporate contributions that helped pay for the travel. So, you know, I filled out the forms that went back to the National Governors Association. I wouldn't know if it was Xerox or Biotech Genetics or whoever had contributed the money for my travel.
Representative Berg?
Who signed your check? That's all you got to report to. You know, I mean, it doesn't make any difference, you know, if the governor's conference, that identifies who sponsored you to be there. And where they got their money from, I guess, from that point, probably doesn't really matter. But at least we have a tracking mechanism to know who is using these things and why you're going there and that. Because I really feel, and I have the same problems with research in this. When we have in private people pay our colleges for research, you know, this to me is the same thing. I mean, you're starting to increase. And if I'm going as a legislature, it's different than if I'm going as a private individual. Now, maybe if you go to these things as a private individual instead of a legislature, but you wouldn't be going there if you wasn't a legislator. So, I mean, I think that's part of our legislative responsibilities, is to be accountable at who is and doing this. If it's in that case, that's who signs your check. That's probably all you have to do. But I do think it's something that should be tracked and kept track of.
Representative Lucas.
Just to follow up on what Representative Berg was alluding to, Senator Thiessen and I believe maybe the only two here, we attended an early learning conference, and Senator Allers, I guess, in Chamberlain, Senator Hanoff in Chamberlain, and our check was paid for by the Council of State Governments, and that's who wrote the check. Now, Senator Thiessen may not have gotten a check because the three from Rapid City all rode in one vehicle. It's how conservative they were, but I don't know who funded that, but that's who paid my $100 for my travel expenses to that.
Representative Putnam.
Maybe we are making a mole out of something here. I'm trying to lessen the blow. Maybe the simplification, we started out by talking about corporations. I think certainly that most legislators in South Dakota would know that if they were invited to go golfing in Florida by Alcoa Aluminum or a large corporation that was clearly identifiable as for some specific reason for looking at housing or looking at pipelines. I mean, there's a host of things. I don't know where we're going to draw the line here. It's going to be very hard. I can understand if a bill was in front of the legislature in South Dakota on pipelines, and all of a sudden the corporation flew 20 legislators to Elk Point to look at a Hyperion oil plant. How do we connect? Are we connecting too many dots? Are we finding boogeymen everywhere? I mean, what are we doing? I'm trying to sort out. I want to be fair also. And I don't want someone to give me some money to send me somewhere for information as a legislator and then turn out to be an illegal act under the oath I take. Therein lies the ethic problem that we think we have put in language. And maybe it's because we're not reading the ethics rules right now that we misunderstand what we're trying to do. The ethic rules are already imprinted and laid out. And if we fall out of those rules, obviously we're going to be reported or can end up in front of that committee. It's a dilemma for me to even vote on what we're talking about, because I can certainly understand possibly being in violation on a number of items, not even as large as what we're talking about here.
Well, what we have before us is an amendment that would say we would report all our travel that is both state and non-state funded. That's the amendment. Are we clear to that? Okay. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Allers?
Aye.
Senator Gary Hansen?
Aye.
Senator Teason?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Krebs?
No.
Representative Lucas?
Aye.
Representative Putnam?
No.
Representative Tiedemann?
No.
Representative Turbeville?
No.
Senator Hanaf?
No.
Motion, 5 nays, 5 nays.
Motion fails. So we're back to the original, or motion to the amend fails. We're back to the original motion, which would be to resend the yellow with the ethics piece in there. Senator Teason.
Well, I'm concerned about doing that because I'm trying to think of myself as a legislator who wasn't in this room today and all of a sudden got another mailing from LRC which repeated something that has been already been sent out but now has with it a portion of the ethics rules with a section underlined. And I see myself sitting at my kitchen table saying, so what's the message here? And I'm not sure what the message is. So I have consternation with all of this because I'm not sure how our fellow legislators receive that. I mean, they're going to sit there and think, so are they telling us we can't do any travel except what's paid by the state? I'm not sure we know here at this table, let alone those that have not benefited from this discussion. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I can make that simple, real simple. For 6 years, I haven't gone anywhere, and I don't plan to go anywhere. That's a pretty easy one for me.
Representative Berg.
It is for me, too, because I've basically had, and I haven't had that problem. But I think there's a lot of them that has done a lot of travel and have gone. And, you know, here again, too, is what's the point in setting out something that we already got? You know, and this is really what we're doing. We already got the ethics and that, and all we're doing is sending out a mailing to do that just to reaffirm what we already have. I don't see a point in that either. So,
Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. So then if I choose or if you choose to use some of your campaign funds for travel in-state to go from Brookings to Sioux Falls or Yankton to Sioux Falls, is that then going to fall under this code of ethics that because you receive campaign contributions? I'm just
Representative Putnam.
Move to table the pending amendment, or the pending motion.
Okay, that's a non-debatable motion. All those in favor of tabling the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Ahlers?
Aye.
Senator Gary Hansen?
Aye.
Senator Teason?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Krebs?
Aye.
Representative Lucas?
No.
Representative Putnam?
Aye.
Representative Tiedemann?
Aye.
Representative Turboville? Aye. Senator Hunoff?
Aye.
9 yeas, 1 nay, 5 excused.
All right, moving on. You should have received, did you hand out the reversions, the dollars and the... Just to have an idea where we at, close to the end of the fiscal year, Mr. Fry has put together our budget and what we have left. This is really an FYI to know where we're currently at the year end.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Decker.
If you look at the information that was sent out, you have the financial statement for fiscal year 2010. That will tell you as of 5/31/10 what that was part of your materials that you would have received from Mr. Fry. That'll give you the current picture. Then if everything that has been...
Mr. Decker, I'm going to stop you. Did you receive that? Because I didn't receive that. Was that in the packet?
No,
that was not in the packets.
Really?
No.
Why did I get it then?
We need to have that before we continue
okay.
on with this
Excuse
discussion.
Excuse me. Well, what you will learn then is you'll see where the current picture is as of 5/31. And then if everything that has been committed to be spent is spent, then you'll have the reversion sheet that I just passed out showing you how much there will be to revert at the end of the year. It'll give you the current picture and then at the end of the fiscal year and what is possible to be reverted.
Thank you.
Chair?
I'm sorry, Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the handout from Carol Huber here is the estimate on 5/31, although the date is June 2nd. I mean, is that what we're looking at? Because the paper, the black and white, the 5/31 numbers are, of course, not matching what we see in front of us.
Right. Well, yeah, 5/31 is today. For example, the June 2nd date of the email shows you what will be left after everything has been committed to be spent for the fiscal year. So it shows that there's a possibility of $170,000 for reversions as of the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah, that's what I think I'm getting at. It is an estimated reversion. So are we making a decision on accepting? Because in April 9th, our last meeting, I have the numbers here, and it said that if there were any reversions, if we were to save on travel, it would be less than $25,000. And we're almost $100,000 on that estimate. So are we just closer to the actual? Is that what you're saying in this handout?
I believe the June 2nd email from Carol to Jim is the more accurate picture, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, this is just for the LRC. This does not include legislative audit.
And we don't know the status of, because we also oversee that group. So
that'd be correct.
I'm sure.
Representative Putnam.
If this is correct and it is an actual number, the reverted number will go to the bottom line on midnight of June 30. And then if a certain number isn't arrived at, it will go to the rainy day account. On the 1st of July, the 1 minute after midnight, it goes to the personal property tax replacement fund. Do we have any care about that, or are we just looking at information that is going to flow and follow that it's going to go there and do what it's supposed to do? Is this just information for us, Madam Chair?
It is information, but there's an issue out there, and it has to do with MEC. For those of you that remember at the on our budget, we indicated that we would not pay our dues, or those dollars would not be paid to MEC. However, in the statute that we passed when we joined MEC, when you give notice of not continuing participation, you have to do it 2 years in advance, and you're committed to that. So that becomes the dilemma that's there. The MEC agreement is signed through the executive branch. That's the statute. So the question rises, with these dollars, we have a commitment statutorily that we owe for 2 years. We have to pay our dues. But the budget, we did not appropriate money in fiscal year 11 to pay for membership. But there is dollars here that you could do in a transfer to pay for 211. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, for 2010, didn't we take that out of the governor's budget, the MEC?
Yes.
Now, if I could follow up, Madam Chair. So we're not taking it out of there this year?
We didn't appropriate for it for 11.
That's what I mean.
Right.
So if I could, Madam Chair, did we drop the governor's budget by that much, or did we just give him
No, we dropped the budget by that much.
Okay. So we could go ahead and spend this from this fund that we have then.
That could be a transfer that could be done. Appropriations meets on Friday or Thursday.
Okay. So will we be taking it up then?
Pursue this. I wanted to have some discussion here if that would be a recommendation to make to the Appropriations Committee.
Okay, thank you.
The hands come up. Senator Hansen's first. Representative Tiedemann, you're the delegate there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not the delegate. I'm the alternate. Senator Haverly and Representative Bill Thompson are the two board members to MEC. It's the Midwestern Higher Education Compact. It involves the 12 North Central states, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. And the membership includes legislative as well as higher ed, as well as K through 12, as well as tech schools from South Dakota. We have five board members that represent South Dakota. Two of them are appointed by the legislature or e-board, and that's the Senator Haverly and Representative Thompson, and then Senator Gerstedt and I are the two alternates. The others are appointed by the governor as per statute. The statute that was passed was carried by Senator Schmidt in the Senate in 2008, and the statute was written such that you have to stay with for 2 years once you decide you're not going to be a member. The obligation is to still pay the dues because they expend dollars out ahead for some of the things going on. This past session, we did a couple things. One, we cut the governor's budget by $95,000, which was the MEC dues. But number two, the thing we did not do is that we did not pass a statute saying we're going to drop our membership in MEC. So we still have a membership and the obligation to pay. Now, as
Representative Putnam said is that we can say, here's the $159,000, and it goes to the bottom line. It can be used by the governor, or we as a legislative group can say, this could meet our obligation in 10 because we cut it in FY11. Midwestern Higher Education Compact looks at cost savings in a number of different avenues. They have the capacity to handle the insurance on those revenue buildings in higher ed. When they did the bid 2 years ago, it resulted, even though they didn't get the bid, it did result in a savings of $85,000 to the state. They also have cost savings opportunities in students crossing over and going to the other 11 schools that they get to pay in-state tuition if they're a MEC member. In South Dakota, it doesn't apply to us because we only charge 150% of in-state tuition for out-of-state students. So that's exactly what the Midwestern Higher Education Compact does. There's also a potential cost savings on the computer technology, but we found out that if they don't provide that, then it's of no value to us. Other states that have been members longer have seen and generated anywhere up to $9 million of cost savings on an annual basis. Illinois, this is one bright light in Illinois, is that they went with the computer program and they saw savings this year of $6 million. So that's what Midwestern, it's very similar to WICHE. WICHE is the Western states. This is primarily the 12 North Central states. WICHE, the dues are paid by the Board of Regents. Even though we cut their budget by it, I think they plan on paying the dues with tuition dollars. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hansen, does that answer your question? Thank you. Senator Ollers? Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Mrs. Mediator. Madam Chair. You know, this argument, this debate, this knowledge is good. I mean, this is okay. This is something we should see in front of us. This is our financial statement. The E-Board is looking over the financial statement of the legislative branch. This is fine. Now, what we haven't seen yet is the executive branch. We don't know what they've reverted yet. So why don't we accept what we're looking at here, thank ourselves for saving the dollars for the citizens of the state of South Dakota, and let this mess go to the Appropriations Committee. And if indeed there is a matter of litigation or law, they make the decision over there, because 2011 isn't with us yet. We still can go back in January and make decisions, and we'll know how much money is exactly on that bottom line to help out if it's necessary. That would be my suggestion. I think I'm very happy to see the savings that our legislative branch has made and the reversion that it's going to show. Now, what we're going to do with that, I'm not exactly thrilled about spending something we've already saved. So let's wait until we get to the appropriations process. What do you think? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Second. That's fine if there's no recommendation, and we'll leave it with appropriations. But I felt it was appropriate that we bring it up here for discussion so that the E-Board is aware of if appropriations does take any action, what it is. So this provided the dialogue for that. All right. Is there anything else to come before this committee? Just a suggestion, and I see you did that, spending money. Somehow, though, is there a way to explore having a bench or something outside this room so for people for standing, just there could be a bench laying around someplace or something, but look at some opportunity for seating out there for people while they're waiting. Just explore. There's got to be benches somewhere in this campus facility domain without paying. Anything else?
I've got some camp stools.
Do you? That sounds good. That's conservative. That would be good. Is there anything else to come before this committee? Our next meeting is August 23rd. Remember, we are not meeting in July. We will then have been in our new fiscal year. We will have some follow-up on some of the items that we had today. And if there's anything else, please get a hold of Mr. Fryer or myself. The Investment Council report will be one item that will be on the agenda. And we will continue. We had some discussion on new member orientation, and we will hope to have something that we can bring to that meeting in August. And will there be anything, the pricing for the computers, if we want to purchase them, we'll have that out there. I thank you for today. It was good discussion. We had some good action. We now have a new member of the Investment Council. And with that, I wish you a safe trip home. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Representative Tiedemann, second by Representative Lucas. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you.
You're going to buy your